Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
In a bipartisan vote in the U.S. Senate, 67 to 32, which included 17 Republicans that voted in favor of an infrastructure bill, the White House revealed some of the details. And, of course, that leads to a number of questions being asked. What's actually in it? Can we afford the roughly $1 trillion price tag? And we'll break that down with Chris Edwards, Director of Tax Policy Studies and editor of DownsizingGovernment.org, joins us. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we passed this bill. What exactly can we expect from it? Because I understand that the legislative text is not there. Is that correct?
Right. There's apparently about a 40-page summary of it that I noticed that CNN has that they got a hold of. So we have a general idea. I mean, there's two buckets of spending here. There'd be a lot more spending on things that state governments are already spending on, like highways and transit and that sort of stuff. And on that spending, I would say, well, why did we need the federal government to do it? States can spend more on their own infrastructure anytime they want. And then the second bucket is spending on what I would call corporate welfare. So $73 billion for electric utility companies, $65 billion for internet broadband companies, et cetera. So I would ask, with that bucket of spending, well, do we really want the federal government getting involved in subsidizing corporations hundreds of billions of dollars like this? I think that's a very bad precedent. So, again, on the first bucket of spending, the highways and bridges and the like, if it's this spending is so great and be so good for the economy, well, why aren't the states doing it already? They've got funding. They've got tax. You know, they can raise taxes or do whatever, you know, repurpose spending for that purpose if they want. And secondly, the subsidizing the privately owned private sector infrastructure, I think that's a very dangerous thing for the federal government to be getting involved in subsidizing corporations like that.
Do we or do we not know how much of the funding for roads and bridges and related projects is actually in the federal highway system as opposed to the state highway system?
Well, here's the thing. The state governments own the entire highway system, the entire interstate highway system, for example. It is entirely owned by state governments. People don't seem to know this. Louisiana, the interstates, they are all owned by the state government of Louisiana. And that's true in every state. So, and that's true with all highways. The federal government owns highways on its own land, like within federal parks and that sort of stuff. But the highway system that we all use, it's all owned by state governments. And that's why every state has gas taxes that they raise to fund their own highways.
But most of that, you would agree.
Income and sales taxes. So why can't states fund their own highways themselves?
Right. Now, and I'm not in disagreement with you, but you would agree that the vast majority of the federal interstate, the interstate system was funded by federal dollars.
Oh yeah, it was for the original building from the time of the 1956 Act under Eisenhower. For the next, I guess, 40 years, the interstate system was completed in the early 90s, mainly federal money. That's right, and no one would disagree that was a good investment. But, you know, I'm arguing if you want to increase this bill increases highway spending above and beyond, you know, the regular amount that the states and the federal government are spending on a regular basis. And I would say if states want to boost this spending on their own highway system, then they should do it themselves. I mean, not every state needs more, you know, more investment in highways. For example, the southern states, of course, are like Texas, Florida, are growing quickly. So they got more demands for highways. They can raise their own highway money. But northern states like Vermont, New York and the like, they're losing people. So, you know, they probably don't need as much investment. But that decision should be up to them.
Yeah. There's also $55 billion on clean water infrastructure in order to eliminate lead pipes and the like. This is probably a better example of that being more of a state and local issue as opposed to a federal issue.
Right. And people will raise the lead pipe issue all the time. And my reaction is, well, why the hell aren't cities? Why haven't they dealt with that already? What the heck is wrong with your city council and your state government, if it hasn't dealt with this problem in your state and city already? I mean, why does it take federal politicians to come in and tell state and local policymakers what apparently they should be doing already? This doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you wouldn't have enough time for me to talk about that with you. You know, and what's interesting though to me is that we viewed this as kind of a pared down situation, you know, as it relates to infrastructure, because now we have the Biden administration talking about human infrastructure, and they want to do that in a whole different way as opposed to this infrastructure bill.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, this is a $550 billion above and beyond the current spending we're already doing on infrastructure. And then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats want to tie the votes on this, which sort of has more, you know, a lot of popularity. They want to tie it to a further bill down the road on a vast increase in the welfare state of a couple more trillion dollars. I don't know whether they're going to be able to do that, but I do fear that this bill, if Republicans go for it, will be a capitulation of the idea that we ought to keep the federal government limited in size, and it'll make it harder for them to oppose Nancy Pelosi's follow-on bill. I mean, the thing that's a bit of ridiculous in this that really disturbs me is, so Senator Rob Portman from Ohio was the Republican leader pushing for this infrastructure bill. He's got an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today pushing for it. He says, oh, well, there's no tax increases in this. Okay, but there's a $550 billion in costs. He should know, as a former budget director, that money doesn't grow on trees. Someone's got to pay that cost. You know, if it was, apparently we're going to be borrowing more, but that's a cost on future taxpayers. And it really disturbs me that someone like Rob Portman, who was a former budget chief, who should know that money doesn't grow on trees, he's pushing this idea that money grows on trees and this is free spending. And it really disturbs me.
Well, especially in light of some of the voodoo economics that are being deployed in order to say that there's not going to be a tax increase, where already folks are attacking the projections, saying they are pretty lofty and doubt very seriously whether or not the measures that are going to be deployed to finance this are actually going to work out. And it'll be
that's
dollar.
Right. I mean, they say, and here's the thing. I mean, so there's apparently a few hundred billion dollars that they're going to be using to fund this, that they said, well, it was money that was passed for the pandemic that is not being used now, so they're going to reprogram it. And they're sort of presenting that as if it's sort of free money. But if there's a few hundred billion dollars that we authorized for the pandemic that we didn't use, well, we should give it back to taxpayers, or we should pay down the federal government debt with it. It's not free money, you know, and that's the great problem here, is that the Republicans like Portman are buying into the idea that this is free, that we can continue this spending spree forever without consequences. And we're heading for a giant financial crisis. Both parties are culprits here, and I think passage of this infrastructure bill is going to lead to even more spending down the road that the Democrats want to do. And like I said, it's completely unnecessary, because if a state has a more demand, if they got congestion on their highways, they want more highway investment, they can raise their own gas taxes anytime they want to fund their own highways. And that actually would be more efficient, because then you wouldn't have to run the money through the big bureaucracies in Washington.
Yeah. Let me ask you, because of the absence of the legislative text, obviously we have, projects outlined in a very broad brush sense. Do we know whether or not they are going to require that the state have some skin in the game, or locals have skin in the game in trying to access this money, or is this money just going to be an out-and-out kind of gift?
That's a very good question. I mean, historically, highway money, most federal aid programs require some, as you say, skin in the game by state government. So highway projects, usually they've been traditionally 50-50. You know, the state goes out and spends $100 million on highways, and the feds will cover half of that. I don't know about the details of this program. I suspect that each one of these additional spending amounts will have different amounts of state-required spending. I mean, in a way, that's not necessarily a good idea, because what it does is it actually ends up with more spending than you really need. I mean, because from the state's perspective, they say, hey, if we spend $50 million more on highways, we're able to draw $50 million from Washington. So it induces states to spend more than they otherwise would. And that's one of the problems with these federal subsidy programs also. Again, virtually all of this infrastructure is owned by state and local governments. And I think it makes more sense for efficiency for the same legislature, the same officials, to think about the benefits of the spending and balance it with the pain of the higher taxes. That way you get a balance, just like when you go to the grocery store. You think, gee, do I want to spend money on this? And you balance it with the cost. But, when the money pours from Washington, it gets rid of this efficient balancing that policymakers should be doing, the balancing the benefits with the cost.
And we don't really ever know, especially when it's at that level, exactly how much we're actually paying to finance all of this. I mean, look, I'm one that has served as a CFO in an organization for a long time, so I would tend to be one who would be considered a numbers guy. Even when I do my own taxes, I don't really sit there and try to figure out exactly, where I feel like I'm being abused one way or the other in figuring that out in kind of a distorted way that I'm trying to present this. But it's just easier, when the Fed is spending this money and it just feels like, we're not feeling the pain, as opposed to when we're dealing with it at a local level, the connection is a lot more intimate.
Right. That's it. There's a separation of the raising of the money and the spending of it. And especially that's true when the federal government is borrowing so much. The politicians don't feel any pain from the spending. To them, it's all benefits. I mean, every politician wants spending in their districts, which is sort of understandable that they're politicians. But, we should have, the whole idea of, just about every state government has a balanced budget requirement. Why? Because we know the politicians like to spend, and we should try to force them to balance that with the pain of having to raise taxes on people. I think people would be shocked, actually, to realize that all this money pouring out of Washington, there's no actual cost-benefit analysis on where this money goes. I mean, they say this bill puts $110 billion into roads, and it puts, $65 billion into high-speed internet. Well, there's actually no analysis behind that to show the actual marginal economic benefits and the like and costs of the different spending. It's just all politics. There's no sophisticated analysis. Like, as you say, if you were a CFO for a corporation would do sophisticated analysis on which investment project makes the most sense for them. The government doesn't do that at all. It's really kind of shocking.
I have a number of texts, and I think this is the disconnect that people have, is they say, well, this is our federal tax dollars. Why wouldn't we want it to come back to the state? But the problem is that this is not a dollar-for-dollar trade. It's not like we're doing zero-based budgeting here, right, where, what we take in is what we spend. That's not it. What we take in, we spend 10x.
Right. And so, I mean, the way to think of the highways are the easiest way to think about this. Both Louisiana and the federal government have gas taxes. The federal gas tax is 18 cents. I'm not sure what it is in Louisiana. It's probably something like 20 or 30 cents. So, you know, if Louisiana needs, you know, to expand a highway, they can either have the feds raise the gas tax. The money would go through Washington. Louisiana may or may not get a fair share of it back. Okay, and it would. There's all the cost of bureaucracy in Washington. And then when the money comes from Washington, it's got all these extra rules attached to it. But if Louisiana raised its own gas tax, kept the money within the state highway agency, and spent it directly, it's more likely to go to projects that make most sense for Louisiana. It's going to have less regulations tied to it, and it wouldn't have any, you know, the extra cost of the bureaucracy in Washington. So that's why I'm saying that is more an efficient way to do spending. And the thing that really annoys me is so federal politicians, I see all these federal politicians that, you know, they want to spend on their local, you know, lead pipe problem in their city or the highways in their state. Well, why they should have remained as state politicians, or they should have remained on the city council. If you love infrastructure, if you're a politician, you love infrastructure, you want to fix lead pipes, you should run for city council. You shouldn't run for the U.S. Senate. If you run for U.S. Senate, you should be worried about national and international issues like national defense. If you want to be a fill pothole, you should run for city council.
Yeah. And we've kind of lost sight of that in so many different respects. I mean, you know, just when I go and I look at the way that they propose that they're going to pay for this, and they justify that this is a, you know, no new taxes, it's a revenue neutral thing by some of what they've engaged in. For example, you know, leftover funds from the economic relief package. What does that mean? I mean, that was just another example of blowing out a lot of...
Again, as if it's free money, but of course, if it's left over, you should give it back to us. I mean,
right, yeah. We found that money tree, and it didn't get picked efficiently.
Right.
And then, you know, and then I think the anti-fraud enforcement for unemployment benefits. So whatever we paid out, that... when we go get it back from these individuals, that's the dollars that they're going to be putting up in order to balance this.
You raise another interesting part of this. You've probably seen some of the headlines that there's literally been tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars from the relief spending over the last year and a half that have just been ripped off. I mean, there's criminal gangs that try to rip off from all these programs, and we shouldn't be naive. And I've written about this in the past. Every big federal spending program like Medicare and Medicaid, there are organized criminal gangs that sit around, use their laptops, and raid the programs and go look for all the vulnerabilities and raid these programs. Earned income tax credits, another good example. It's about the program costs about $100 billion a year. About 25% of it disappears through errors and fraud. So this is a giant problem, and it's particularly bad when the money comes from Washington, because if states are raising their own money and spending on their own programs, the state officials have a good incentive to reduce the fraud, because there's only a limited amount of money. When the money comes pouring in from Washington, suddenly the incentive to reduce the fraud disappears, because the states are like, well, you know, we're getting all this free money, let's just spend it as fast as we can. So, you know, it's yet another problem when the money pours in from Washington.
And then lastly, as I recall, they're going to delay the Medicaid Part D rebate rule. Why is that a good thing?
I've not followed that issue at all. There's so many moving pieces in this bill, but I think that is one of the so-called funding pieces from this bill.
Yeah, I mean, so when I look at, and I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I do believe I'm not as hard as you are on some of the federal spend, but I do believe that there should be a stream of accountability. And when I start looking at how they're going to finance this, you know, with $50 billion in fraudulently paid unemployment benefits and $30 billion by applying tax information reporting requirements to cryptocurrency, we can't figure out who's hacking.
Works.
We but we can't figure out who's hacking our information technology systems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are we going to go figure out who's cheating us in cryptocurrency?
They're one of the roles of the committees on Capitol Hill that raise taxes and put these budget bills together. They basically have lists of so-called revenue raisers sitting around that are essentially fake numbers on a spreadsheet that they say, oh, well, we can reduce tax fraud and raise $100 million or $100 billion, whatever number they want. You know, the congressmen just say, tell their staffers, hey, can we get some revenue raisers to fill this hole here and fill this hole here? And often they're fake numbers pulled out of their backside, frankly. And the government doesn't actually, you know, these numbers, they don't really end up accounting for anything, which is one of the reasons why federal deficits and debt just keep rising out of control.
And that's the thing that I find obnoxious. You're selling me a pig in a poke. I mean, don't try to justify your position by saying this is not going to be an increase in taxes and we're utilizing all of these phony, lofty
and what often
initiatives
happens
to finance this, because it's not going to happen.
You're right. And they pass a bill, and then you'll find out a few years later that there are government auditors in the Government Accountability Office and the Inspectors General who a few years later will look at it and come out with a report saying that there's all these kind of fraud and mistakes and fake estimates and the like. But it's too late. The legislation's already passed. Horses already run out of the barn. And the politicians have already moved on, and there's no accountability. There's never any political accountability that way either. Politicians never admit they made any kind of mistakes, that their economic forecast or anything was wrong, but then it's too late. And so this lack of accountability, I completely agree with you. It's really infuriating.
Do they get the 60 votes? This has to come back, right? And they got to get the 60 votes.
It seems that they've put so much effort into this infrastructure bill, and Biden's on board with it, that something will pass, from my point of view. Unfortunately, I really hope Republicans stand together, and I hope some of those moderate Democrats like Manchin stand against spending another few trillion dollars in an additional package later on this fall.
$3.1 trillion to be exact, right?
it's a huge stunning number. A stunning amount. The entire federal budget just a few years ago was only $3 trillion. I mean, and now it's an additional amount that they're going to spend, even though we're already massively in debt. It's remarkable.
And they're talking about having, the Federal Reserve is talking about maybe having to tamp down the speed of the growth of the economy at the present time. A lot of this is not aligning.
The Federal Reserve has no idea what future the economy holds either. For them, it's just a giant guessing game. They misjudge the spurt of inflation we're getting now. And so I don't trust any of them. I think we ought to head to a balanced budget. That we ought to have a neutral and tight money policy from the central bank. They shouldn't be helping the government finance this massive debt. We should have balanced budget requirements like state governments do. It's really a disaster in Washington. It hasn't manifested itself now in the lives of average people yet, but it will.
It will.
Either through inflation,
not
spiking
a question
interest
if it's
rates.
Not a question of if, it's a question of when. Chris Edwards, Director of Tax Policy Studies and Editor of DownsizingGovernment.org. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate
Thank
your
you,
insight. All righty, we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.